I'm going to let you have like 2 minutes to talk about this trip and then we're changing subject.
No. We've actually got to get onto our real subject for today.
Okay, good.
Because Rod was telling me about a program that he started several years ago, which is becoming quite a significant thing, and it's called the Cultivate Conference.
Ooh.
So this is why Rod was talking about herbage in the outback, and we stirred him the whole 3 weeks over his herbage. Gave him no mercy over it. But Rod, you've got quite a history and a background in agriculture and started this Cultivate Conference. What is this conference all about? Tell us all about it.
All right. Well, I guess Cultivate stemmed from my own personal need when I decided to turn a home garden into a market garden, and I realized I really knew nothing and I really needed some serious help from people that did know something. And I heard about this conference in the United States. A group of people called the Adventist Agriculture Association had started over there, and they started this conference, and I actually went all the way to Florida to their conference, had a fantastic time, decided, why can't we have something like this in Australia? And Cultivate Conference in Australia was born.
This sounds so good. I'm suddenly so interested in everything you have to say. I'll forgive you if you mention spin effects. This is so
good. Mon has instantly gone from lots of eye rolling to now she has a million questions.
All right. Now, Mon, I don't know if you've got a green thumb or a brown thumb, but in a nutshell, Cultivate's like a place where people who love to get their hands dirty and grow stuff, or think they would like to get their hands dirty and grow stuff, or think they should get their hands dirty and grow stuff, and think they could grow stuff, or maybe they just used to grow stuff and would like to get back into it, or maybe they just know someone who grows stuff. But it's a time and a place for both the green and the brown thumbs to get together to have a fantastic time, learning amazing things, meeting like-minded people, making lifelong friends, and, you know, have a general good old time as they discuss all things down on the farm or just in the backyard.
That is so cool.
Like, people don't have to be a farmer or agriculturist to come along. By far, the majority of people are beginning gardeners, or maybe they've got a small patch in their backyard, or many have never planted a seed in their life, you know, complete newbies. But there's something for everyone, from the seasoned gardeners through to the kids.
Mon, I think we need to sponsor you to go to this conference.
I super would love that. I have black thumbs. I'm like the black widow of plants. You give me a plant, I will kill it. I don't even know how. Like, I overlove them or something. And, like, it's unusual because my parents could, like, make an oasis from a rock. And then there's me, who didn't inherit any of that. But I like how you started off by saying you wanted to grow stuff and you didn't know anything about it, and so you went and researched it. Because that's how I feel. Like, I feel like I know nothing about how to make stuff grow. I would love it if there was a conference I could actually go to. Because I feel like when I research this online, often I'm, like, accidentally reading American stuff and the seasons are all different and the stuff, the information's all back to front. And I'm like, okay, where's the Australian stuff? I feel like it's just such a huge ocean. Because did you know, by the way, gardening is the world's biggest hobby? And I feel like it's such a huge ocean, I could never, like, figure out how to swim across it.
Now, I get that. But what we need more than just cold information is to mix with people that – either the people that are on the same level as us, and we can help each other out, tell each other our stories of failures or success. And even better, if there's someone there that's, you know, we can stand on the shoulders of and learn something from. And, you know, it's the personal aspect, it's the social aspect that makes this really powerful, because you're sitting around telling yarn, sharing experiences, both the struggles and the success. And, man, it's really powerful.
Do they, like, they have, like, a seed collecting something or other happening as well, like the heirloom and the heritage seeds? Is something like that happening there as well?
Yeah, there's people that are really into that, and we're hoping to have someone this year that actually it's their business to do that. But, you know, they come along and teach us how to save our seeds and how to look after them and keep those heirloom things happening and all the rest of it.
You should get my mum. My mum cultivates her own seeds, and then she's such a good mum. She, like, sends you little packets of seeds that she's, you know, collected herself, and then she has all the little information written on the little envelope. And, like, literally sometimes I'm like, I can't do this. And sometimes I just eat the seeds.
Yeah. What?
Because I'm just like, okay. I don't know how to deal with that. But yeah,
I see, I, I see the black thumb coming out there when you're eating the seeds that you're supposed to be planting.
I can kill a cactus. I have killed many cactuses in my time. And I know those are the unkillable plant, but like...
Okay, Mon, I want you to go to cultivateconference.com.au and register now, okay?
You
need help.
She is actually literally, Rod, she is literally on her computer going there this moment.
Cultivate.
Okay, Rod, tell us quickly, what kind of speakers have you got coming this year?
Okay, so we've got people coming from the States, New Zealand, as well as Australia to cover a wide range of things. We're looking at having an emphasis on home gardening this year. We've had a strong emphasis on small-scale intensive market gardening in the past, which is where I fit into the scheme of things. But we're focusing on home gardening and also on giving people the sorts of skills and confidence they might need if they're contemplating a move to the country from, you know, a more urban sort of a lifestyle, taking the step towards a rural lifestyle. Yeah, so a real lineup. We'll be covering things like beekeeping, irrigation, weed control, composting, soil chemistry. We'll be going through specific crops. You know, in the past, we've done things like small engine maintenances and chainsaws. And we really want to encourage kids and young people into this. So, you know, we have seminars with the kids. We have seminars with the mums on helping them, you know, learn how to have kids enjoying their time in the garden, teaching them how to love practical work. And, you know, even talking about how kids become more resilient with the practical skills they learn, and even the opportunities of them to become entrepreneurs. I mean, my son, when he was 11, started a peanut butter making business that made him a lot of money. He's bought him motorbikes and GoPros and drones and all these things that he wants to invest his money in. So we're really wanting to make it attractive to those families and to those kids as well.
That sounds like a great way of learning how to get your kids away from screens and into something real.
Absolutely. You know, because how can I put it? The experience that my kids, you know, we've only been market gardening for the last 4 years or so. And I have seen as the kids have spent time in the garden, you know, my kids have been homeschooled and it was part of their education to spend, you know, 15 to 20 hours in the garden with me each week, and the absolutely transforming experience it was for them. You know, they've become confident, practical, useful young people. And yeah, they still use their screens and, you know, all the rest of it. But there's an element added to it that I think was in God's design for the family and for children. You know, when we live an agrarian life in nature, we can be distracted by all those simple things of life. And, you know, kids learn how to play with sticks and climb trees and build things and entertain themselves, you know, in useful pursuits where they're physically growing as well as mentally and even spiritually growing as they have that simple experience.
Yeah, and I got to say, Rod, that was one of the things I loved about traveling with your family through the outback. You know, your younger son, you know, Jack, who was out there with us, and how old's Jack now? 13 years old, 13. You know, and he's out there and he's into everything, Mon. You should have seen this kid. I mean, the camel turns up, he's going to chase the camel. It's just like, you know, whatever's happening. Cool. It's like, if you see something, tie Jack down before he chases it away.
Don't forget that feral goat that he called Lyle.
That's right. He literally chased down and caught a feral goat and was dragging around by the horns.
Are you serious? No, I'm serious.
He's a real kid, you know, and this is the kind of childhood that that kids need to have today.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, this is real living. Rod, you've mentioned a couple of times a spiritual aspect to this program. So Cultivate Conference, I take it, is not just an agricultural program, but it's a spiritual program as well. What's the link between spirituality and agriculture?
Look, we can go back to Genesis chapter 1 and 2, you know, where the Bible describes that God made a garden for Adam and Eve to live in. And the occupation that Adam was given was to dress and to keep the garden, or to be an agriculturalist or an agrarian or, you know, a gardener. And I think, I know God designed that because our minds need that, and it makes us, the struggles of agriculture this side of sin make us rely on God like not much else can do, because, you know, we know that Australia is a land of drought, of flood and burning sun and all the rest of it. And so myself as a gardener, I realize that this is all beyond me, and I can't afford to be a deist gardener that believes that, you know, God created this world, wound it up like a clock, and he's just set it going and just standing back and watching. I need God involved in my life and in my career, my business, every day of the week, because through agriculture I learn to depend upon God. I realize that the big things of life are out of my control, and the very best place I can be is, you know, as I'm working, thinking about things, praying as I work, you know, Lord, give me wisdom. Teach me what's going on here. Help me to understand the interactions between bacteria and fungi in my plants and the nutrients in the soil. And thank you, God, for the sun that's shining and for the rain that's come. And, oh, man, what the perfect place to be to learn that in everything in my life, I need to depend on my maker for success.
Yeah, fantastic, Rod. Now, just another question before we finish up. We are starting to run out of time here, but you have a background in running health centres.
Correct.
And with all of the health centres that you've run, there's been an agricultural program attached to it. Now, correct, we all understand the benefits of organic food over, you know, just the stuff that's sort of kind of mass-produced and plonked on our shelves. But in Australia right now, where depression is one of the, you know, is probably the greatest pandemic we're facing, is there an emotional benefit to participating in agriculture as well as just a physical benefit from eating the food?
Okay, I might be going out on a limb here, but I don't know anything that will help a person's mental health better than spending time outside in the fresh air, in the sun, exercising the body as we work with nature. My own experience after decades of working with people and the pressures that come with that, you know, the mind pressures that come with that, you know, including helping people to improve their physical and mental health at our health retreat. After decades of doing that, of teaching, doing all sorts of things, I took this turn, this pivot, if you like, to full-time gardening, and nothing that I've ever done before helped my mental health. That's my personal experience, but our guests at the retreat, you know, I'd see people stressed from the grind of daily life go out into the garden or go and lie down in the thick clover with one of our calves and go to sleep with the calf, you know, head on her chest. I remember that happened to one of our guests. I've just seen stress just, you know, just glide away sort of thing as a different reality comes into view. And mine, I think this is one of the reasons why gardening is the world's biggest hobby, because not only has God designed us to spend time in nature in this way, but somehow if we just get a little bit of a taste of it, we recognize it and we think, wow, I don't know what's going on here, but it's good for me, so let's do it.
Yeah, 100%.
Fantastic, Rod. When and where is the next Cultivate conference happening?
Next Cultivate conference runs between November 6 and 10 this year at a venue called Camp Obadiah.
Sorry, I read the website.
Okay, between Taree and Port Macquarie on the mid-north coast of New South Wales, about 3 hours' drive north of Sydney.
Fantastic, Rod. Thank you so much for joining us. And if you're listening in today, this is definitely something to, jump on there, cultivateconference.com.au and sign up now.
I think I might sign up my parents, actually, as well. I think I might do a family affair. It's going to be great.
You know what I've done, Mon?
What's that?
I don't think I've ever done this before. Uh-oh. I have asked our interview guest who is on the phone to stay on the phone for this section of Encounter with God.
Oh, yeah, that's a first.
So often when we have our interview guest who comes into the studio, we're like, yeah, just stay for the Bible study. But this time we've said stay on the phone.
It's very interesting.
There's a very important reason for it.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
What's that?
It's because of what our Bible study today is all about. But we're going to just come back to that. So hold that thought. Don't go anywhere.
Well, our guest has a lot to answer for.
Stay tuned in. Oh, really?
Yeah, well, I usually go and make my breakfast at this point, but I was so just involved with the cultivateconference.com.au website that I forgot, and now it's the news is over and I'm hungry. Where's my peanut butter toast?
And you're not going to have a big enough break to go and make breakfast until maybe question of the day, but probably not.
Hold the hour.
You missed your breakfast.
But this Cultivate Conference looks good. I'm cooking up a plan.
Okay.
I think my brother and I chip in together and we're going to send our parents to the Cultivate Conference for Christmas. As their Christmas present, not for Christmas, but as their Christmas present this year.
Because it's before Christmas.
It's right before Christmas. Well, yeah. It's like it's in November.
November 6th.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be great.
All right, Rod, you still there?
I am.
Good. So this is all good news, right?
It is good news. Good on you, Mom.
Apart from the bit where I don't have my peanut butter toast, but yeah, sure. Okay. This is a what book am I quiz, and our fourth clue is this. It's another quote from this book, and it goes like this. For what I want to do, I do not do, but what I hate, I do. And if I do what I do... Wait, I'm going to get myself confused.
You're going to get yourself so turned around in this passage.
I agree that the law is good. Bit of a tongue twister. What book is that from? If you know the answer, give us a call, 1-800-FAITH-FM, 1-800-324-843. You can text your guesses to 0491-064-669. First person to get it right will win themselves a prize.
So, Rod, don't give the answer, but do you know the answer?
I do.
Yeah, okay. There you go. Yeah, I thought you would. It's a bit of a famous passage, that one. Sparks a little bit of debate on occasions.
Yeah.
Always a fun passage to sit around and talk about on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon or whatever.
Why is it so debatable? It's just about self-control and how you lack it and you often you don't want to do you don't want to sin, but then you find yourself
sinning. Well, Mon, just don't even go down that rabbit hole because I will Rod and I will start a discussion here. And it would be a long
I
one.
Didn't even realize this was a hot topic.
You won't get either breakfast or lunch.
hang up the phone, Lyle.
Anyway, so there is a passage here of the Bible that I do want Rod to comment on, and that is Leviticus chapter 25, verse 1-7. So, Mon, if you could turn over there, and here you're going to find one of the laws of God was given to ancient Israel, and when you first read it, you're going to read it and think, what on earth is God talking about right here? And why is God actually saying what he's saying in this particular situation?
So Leviticus 25.
Leviticus 25, verse 1-7.
Okay, you want me to read that?
Yes.
While Moses was on Mount Sinai, the Lord said to him, give the following instructions to the people of Israel. When you have entered the land I am giving you, the land itself must observe a Sabbath rest before the Lord. Before the Lord every seventh year. For 6 years you may plant your fields and prune your vineyards and harvest your crops. But during the seventh year, the land must have a Sabbath year of complete rest. It is the Lord's Sabbath. Do not plant your fields or prune your vineyards during that year. And don't store away the crops that grow on their own or gather the grapes from your unpruned vines. The land must have a year of complete rest. But you may eat whatever the land produces on its own during its Sabbath. This applies to you, your male and female servants, your hired workers, and the temporary residents who live with you. Your livestock and the wild animals in your land will also be allowed to eat what the land produces. What?
Isn't that interesting?
So every seventh year they have the whole year off?
Okay, I want you to think about this, right?
Uh-huh.
When it comes to the Sabbath, the king gets to have a day off once a week.
Yes.
Yep. Okay? He's the king. He's allowed to have a day off once a week.
Right.
But then the business people get to have one day off once a week.
Mm-hmm.
The lawyers and the doctors get to have a day off once a week.
Correct.
The servants and the slaves get to have a day off once a week.
Yeah.
Even the animals, the beasts of burden that we refer to them as, get to have a day off once a week.
Yeah.
And now God says the land gets to have a day off once every 7 years.
For a whole year.
For a whole year.
That's incredible.
Okay, Rod, go jump in.
Go on.
Okay, so one of the reasons I've asked Rod to stay on the phone is that not only is the founder of Cultivate Conference and also the owns and runs a very successful small market garden. But Rod also has a background in agriculture that, you know, sort of goes back many years, worked with orchards and all kinds of different things in the past. So Rod, I'm wondering whether you can comment on this and you can give us some insight. What on earth is God talking about in this passage?
Oh, is anyone doing this in modern day times? Wow.
Okay. All right. So we've all heard of the concept of having a sabbatical. You know, we hear academics having a sabbatical year. They go off to do special study, to reflect, to regenerate. But why only them? Why can't the rest of us have sabbaticals? So you probably didn't know that the original sabbatical was for farmers, not physicists or philosophers or philologists, but for farmers. And even our land or our gardens can have a sabbatical too. So from my perspective, what this commandment is it's aiming to hit a bunch of good stuff in the farmer's life all at the same time. Okay, so first of all, it talks about the land having a Sabbath. It's like the land needs a rest to renew the forces necessary for growth. So, you know, we know that periods of fallowness where land is not ploughed is crucial for continued fertility. And modern agriculture often does this by growing what we call cover crops or green manures for a period to rejuvenate the soil. And this allows, you know, things like the organic matter to build up in soil as the weeds or the cover crops convert sunlight and carbon dioxide into carbon. You know,
what kind of farmers would be using a cover crop on a regular basis these days?
Oh, look, so many. You know, it's just becoming common knowledge that one of the most important things we can do is grow cover crops to add organic matter to the soil, because the organic matter, the carbon, is the basis of soil fertility. So everyone from small-scale intensive market gardeners like myself through to broad acre people, they have times when the paddocks just rest, okay, and they leave the stubble in the soil or whatever it is over this period of time. And this allows microbial populations to build up and stabilize, and the whole soil, what they call the soil food web, kicks in, and the mycorrhizae, these fungi that grow in association with the roots of a plant in this symbiotic relationship, they can grow and do their amazing work. And ploughing destroys their minute filaments that are so crucial to healthy crops and healthy yields. Because I don't know whether you realize it, but these mycorrhizal fungi, they attach themselves to plant roots. They exude acids that break down soils and make nutrients that are otherwise chemically tied up in the soil available to the plants. And the plants, in turn, use a third or even a half of solar energy they transform into carbohydrates to produce sugars that they feed to the fungi.
Oh, you've got to be joking.
Absolutely not.
That's amazing.
You know? So they need each other. And when we're continually ploughing or disturbing the soil, the fungi just can't provide that service to the plant. Like, for argument's sake, I grew up in southwest WA, and when they cleared the curry forest down there to try to plant wheat, their wheat just failed. And it wasn't for, I don't know, 100 years later that agriculture researchers found out that the mycorrhizal fungi necessary for wheat to grow successfully was not in that soil. But as soon as they inoculated it, off you go. Everything's growing fine. You could get good wheat crops. So leaving the soil untilled for one season gives it a chance to reset itself. It allows soil chemistry and biology to find homeostasis that makes it be able to produce more plentiful crops. You know, and I've got friends. I haven't had a sabbatical year. I've only been around 4 years. But farming friends of mine say that in the eighth year, that is after the sabbatical, they have better soil tilth. They use less fertilizer. Look, can I quote from one? I got an email from John in Tennessee this week. I can say that we have had our best year ever. This is after 25 years of farming.
Okay, hang on for a second.
Yep.
You're listening to Faith FM, positively different radio.
Sorry about that. I was so absorbed in what you were saying that I wasn't watching what the clock was doing. But okay, go back to that email that you had from your friend who is now in their eighth year.
25th year.
Oh, 25th year.
So So they've been growing for 25 years, but they've just had their last year they had their first seventh-year sabbatical. And he says, we have had our best year ever as far as quality and quantity of produce and freedom from insects and diseases. Blessings from the sabbatical? I'd like to think so.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, Rod, just tell me what happens if you over-cultivate, because we look at some places where they've, you know, they've got a piece of dirt and they are just trying to drag every last penny out of that dirt that they possibly can, and they are constantly pouring, you know, water into it and whatnot. What's happening to the soil there?
You remember the Dust Bowl in the United States? You lose your soil. Your soil becomes sterile and you no longer have a farming business or a fertile backyard garden plot.
Wow.
Simple as that. Yeah. You know, if we sustainability is all the buzzword. You know, if we want to look after our land, you know, God's given us some really good advice here. And I'm not here to tell everyone that they should be doing this. You know, I'm not trying to convince everyone that every seventh year they need to give their garden, or that it's a law that's binding today. It's up to every person to decide.
But, sure, yeah.
You know, when we look at the soil, you know, but we can't stop there, because God talks about what the farmer gets. The farmer gets a year of rest.
Now, okay? That's very radical.
It's a radical change from the daily grind, time for recreation, for education, time for meditation and prayer, more time to spend with the family, do the things that the kids are interested in, go for a holiday somewhere special. Or
go to Outback Australia?
Oh, yeah, that was kind of it. But farming, I think why, all sorts of reasons why it's focused at farming, but farming is so busy. It's perfectly reasonable to think that if we stop the daily grind, we're going to get behind, go broke, and fail those who depend on us. But here, God is promising to look after us and bless us for taking a whole year off. This is God's design to prevent farmer burnout. Take a break, fertilize your brain instead of the soil by learning something new. Go and unselfishly do something for someone else. Enrich your relationship with your family and come back to work after a year's break with enthusiasm.
That's amazing. And I mean, this is back in the day. What we have to stop and remember is this. This was written down 3,500 years ago, you know, and what you're talking about with, you know, the soil and the fungi and the symbiotic relationships between plants and the, you know, the organisms, the microorganisms in the dirt and everything that's taking place here. We can understand that today from a scientific perspective, but this was written down 3,500 years ago. Not only that, but we are also now seeing the necessity for, you know, recreation. We're understanding that. I mean, you look at the incredibly high rate, the heartbreakingly high rate of suicide amongst farmers today. It's
absolutely.
It's just heartbreaking. And here you've got 3,500 years ago, God is recognizing this. And we live in a day and age of, you know, annual leave. That never existed back then. There was that concept, you know, you got up, you worked, you went to bed. That was how you lived your life from, you know, from when you were a kid to when you got old and frail and or, you know, passed away. But, you know, we live in a world where there's annual leave and there's certain expectations for taking a break. We understand the necessity of that. And God understood all of this, you know, 3,500 years ago.
He made us, mate. He knows how we tick. He knows what we need. You know, and what's amazing to me, if anyone's wondering, how am I going to survive during that seventh year without a harvest or an income? You know, further on in chapter 25, past where Mont read, it says, and if you'll say, but what are we going to eat in the seventh year? We're not going to sow, so we're not going to gather any harvest. And it says in verse 21, then I will command my blessing upon you in the sixth year, and it shall bring forth fruit for 3 years. So in other words, God promises to bless the harvest in the sixth year, not just to last over the seventh year, but until the ninth year if necessary.
Mm.
I kind of want to go into farming just so I can do a sabbatical year and see what happens.
I have to tell you a story.
Do it, Mon.
I have to tell you a story. So in, when was it, 1975, when I was 2 years old, we moved to Tasmania and we set up a property down there. We had 100 fruit trees, every different variety. We had 14 different kinds of berries and a pretty large garden. And I think it was 1980, we went to Western Australia for 4 months. And of course, we missed our planting season, came back, and expecting there to be absolutely nothing. You know, the whole garden has just gone wild. You know, you can imagine what it looked like. But we came back broke to the max, like poor as poor. Cousin came with us, so we had an extra mouth to feed. She lived with us for a year. That was fantastic. And it was like that. We were just – my dad was literally giving my mum $5 a week to provide for the house. That was it. And what had happened while we had been away and the ground had just been left there is that the garden had grown wild. And the thing that had grown the most wild from my memory as a kid, I think I was like 9 years old or something or other, I can't remember, was the broccoli. So we lived on broccoli for about a year. We learned to like broccoli, and then we learned to hate broccoli, and then we learned to like it. We kind of went through phases with broccoli.
The only thing you didn't learn was how to pronounce broccoli, but go on.
But it was really quite amazing how much we harvested out of that garden that had just been growing wild.
You know, amazing.
After having had a short, you know, 5 months, 6 months, I can't remember now, sabbatical rest, yeah.
But there's something else we can't forget. It's not just about our land, and it's not just about us as farmers. God here is proposing a radical egalitarian revolution, because who's to benefit? Who's to receive the benefit from the sabbatical year? Mon read it. Food for the farmer. Okay, it can be harvested but not sold, so go and help yourself. It's for your farm workers, for the foreigners, for your farm animals, and even the wild creatures that live on your farm. So, you know, in Exodus 23, God specifies that it's the poor people, the destitute and the underprivileged, that take priority, and they can take whatever they like, okay? So what God's saying is, 1 year in seven, I want agricultural output to be ownerless and free to everyone, and that all food resources are shared by all members of the community, the rich and the poor. So, the other aspect that we haven't talked about further down, that all loans are to be forgiven in the seventh year, allowing people to, you know, sunk in debt, the opportunity to start over. So if this doesn't hit to the heart of many of the key social and environmental issues we're facing today, I don't know what does. It raises deep questions about the nature of a healthy and sustainable life for individuals, for the land and society. And it seems to me designed by God, the creator, remember, to shift how selfish human beings relate to the earth and to the environment, to think about not pursuing short-term gains at the cost of long-term desolation, if you like,
mm-hmm.
like what happened, you know, in middle America when we just plowed and plowed and plowed and it all blew away. We need to start thinking that my farm is not just some resource to be used and abused. It's like a call to stewardship. When we abstain from working the land during that sabbatical year and relinquish ownership of what it produces, okay, we acknowledge that we don't own the land. And wow. at best, it's been given to us in trust for future generations. So I think this is a crucial insight for our modern world, as you say, given to us 3,500 years ago. And it gives us an opportunity to free ourselves from the constant pursuit of material goods and wealth, and the tragic illusion that these things, these material goods and wealth, signify our value and the value of our existence.
That's so amazing.
For an entire year, we can turn our focus away from our financial growth and the expansion of our assets, but rather focus all our resources on others, with a guarantee from God that He will look after our business for us. Now, how isn't that a win-win-win-win situation?
You know, it's no wonder that Jewish people have a reputation of, you know, being some of the most successful, one of the most successful races in the world. When you start to apply these principles, these are principles for growth and prosperity and health and happiness. And we can see how that has, you know, passed down through the generations. We have a lot to learn from, you know, what God has written down in the past. Often you read the book of Leviticus and like, oh, yeah, that was just for, you know, the distant past. But God understands us as individuals, as people. He understands His entire creation.
Good on you, Lyle.
Anyway, we're back with Encounter with God here on Faith FM. We've been talking about agriculture this morning, which has been absolutely amazing, a whole agricultural theme. And I hope that you've been enjoying it as much as Mont and I have. It has been absolutely amazing. And, of course, we've got Rod Bailey on here from the Cultivate Conference. I want to come back to something that Rod was mentioning here a moment ago. Mon, can you go to Deuteronomy chapter 15 for us and talk about this concept of debt? And we're just going to read a bit of a passage here. Deuteronomy chapter 15, start for us there in verse 1, Mon, and down through 11 or so forth. We'll see where we get to.
At the end of every seventh year, you must cancel the debts of everyone who owes you money. This is how it must be done. Everyone must cancel the loans they have made to their fellow Israelites. They must not demand payment from their neighbors or relatives, for the Lord's time of release has arrived.
Yeah, we can probably stop there.
Yeah.
Okay, so are we just creating a welfare society here where people can just like, you know what, I'm going to go and borrow a whole bunch of money over and above my my ability to repay it, and I can do that because I know in 7 years' time I'm not going to have to pay it back anyway. I just get it for free.
I have thought of that before when reading that.
Mm.
I have thought, you know, wouldn't someone take advantage? I guess the person issuing the loan has to, you know, lend wisely.
Well, this is the thing, because the system actually works. It doesn't actually create a welfare society, because what it does is it throws a lot more responsibility back on the lender.
They've got to, yeah, that's right, actually, yeah.
Okay, so think about this, guys, and Rod, you can chip on it as well as if you want, but you think about the financial crises that we have been hit with, you know, in the last 20 years or so, have been created...
Banks giving loans willy-nilly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if you were a bank, and if you were knowing that you would be, this debt would be cancelled in seven years' time if it wasn't paid back, you would be thinking hard about who you loaned your money
to,
wouldn't you?
That's so true. You'd be thinking, I need to get some interest back on this to make money as a bank. So who can actually pay this back plus the interest in 7 years' time?
So this is not a welfare system. This is actually a brilliant system that creates an environment where you're not going to have a financial collapse created by overlending.
Yeah, because they're taking advantage of people. They know they're going to entrap people for life by giving some of these loans out.
That's right, and of course it you know it puts it back on the banks and forces the banks to take responsibility.
I love it.
And it's not just about bad lending practices either. It recognizes that stuff happens. You know, and that a lender, a person that's in a position with more resources than they need and can pass it on, you know, put it into circulation for someone else to spend for a useful purpose, they got to recognize that stuff happens and things don't always go to plan. And so it's not just malevolent intent of the lenders or the incapacity of the borrowers to pay back, but things go bad. Accidents happen. You know, and it brings us back to this concept of don't just think about yourself. Think about the effects on other people and do what you can to improve the lives of not just your own, yourself or your family, but also for other community members as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so really just, you know, you read the Bible, it is just so enlightened, you know, for an ancient book.
It's
there's so much we could learn from this.
Imagine if we'd followed this all along, we would have avoided, you know, the Great Depression. So many things we could have just done better. If we just followed the Bible.
Anyway, Exodus chapter 21, Mon, and start for us there in verse 1. We're going to look at the issue of slavery here for a moment. A controversial subject. People say, why does the Bible support slavery? We mentioned this before, but slaves in Israel had rights to the point where they were not what you would call a slave in the classical sense. They were a low-paid contract worker.
Okay, Exodus 21, verse 1. These are the regulations you must present to Israel. If you buy a Hebrew slave, he may serve for no more than 6 years. Set him free in the seventh year, and he will owe you nothing for his freedom. If he was single when he became your slave, he shall leave single. But if he was married before he became a slave, then his wife must be freed with him. If the master gave him a wife while he was a slave, and they had sons or daughters, then only the man will be free in the seventh year, but his wife and children will still belong to his master. But the slave may declare, I love my master, my wife and my children. I do not want to go free. If he does this, his master must present him before God. Then his master must take him to the door or doorpost and publicly pierce his ear with an awl. After that, the slave will serve his master for life.
Okay, let's stop there. I think we're starting to get the rough idea. But basically, if you were completely down and out, there was a safety net. God created this as, and doesn't sound like slavery, a safety net. That doesn't sound like a safety net. Let me summarize very quickly because you've run through a whole bunch of different aspects there, but not all of them. Slaves in Israel both owned and inherited land. They had the right to marry. They had equal rights as any other person in a court of law. They had the right of physical protection by their master. They had the right of freedom of movement, the right to a freedom of worship on the Sabbath. They had the right to keep the feasts, freedom to keep the feast, freedom from slander. If you had a slave, you were not allowed to say anything bad about him. They were to be a part of the extended family. They could not be compelled to work with rigor. You know, no 17-hour days.
Mm-hmm.
Any debilitating physical injury caused by the owner was cause for immediate emancipation. When they were set free, at the time of departing, they would be given livestock, grain, and wine or grape juice to give them a start. And as we mentioned there a moment ago, it could be renounced by a ritual ear piercing if the slave decided he wanted to stay.
Wow.
So when you look at that whole system, it's not really what we would call a slave. He was a low-paid contract worker contracting for 7 years of work. Set out what he would actually receive: food, lodging, and a payout when he finished.
It's a bit like workplace laws instituted by God way back.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
where nobody actually ends up, completely down and out and on the street, and or was supposed to, completely homeless and without any kind of opportunity.
It's a cruel thing that God knew, like social science, better than we ever thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, we don't have a lot of time left, but I'm just wondering whether we could just grab a little bit of extra time there. And Rod, before we finished up, I just wanted to ask you what is your 7-year sabbatical as an agricultural person, as a market gardener? What's that actually going to look like?
Oh, I'm not exactly sure what 2022 is going to look like for us, but in the book of Malachi, God tells us to test him. He says, do an experiment, prove me, and see if I'll do what I say I will do. So we look forward to doing an experiment, and we fully expect, if you like, to taste and see that the Lord is good. You know, a lot of people talk about having a personal experience with God, but if you like, by definition, experience is knowledge gained by experiment. And so we're going to experiment with God with this sabbatical thing. We're going to give it a go. And maybe if we're still around, we could talk about the results. But we are absolutely looking forward to it.
So that's 2022, Rod.
Correct.
There you go. Well, we'll make an appointment, I think, to call you back in 2022 here on The Breakfast Show and in the middle of the year and see how things are going.
Maybe also we could schedule in another trip to the Simpson Desert together live.
Now you are talking.
Go to Antarctica. That's what you should do with your sabbatical year. Go to Antarctica. See that thing before it melts.
Don't know that you can do a whole lot of agriculture down there, but it would be interesting to experiment.
By then I'm sure Rod could create
a system down there that they could grow stuff. Anyway, we need to move on with the show. We're way over time. Rod Bailey from the Cultivate Conference, thank you so much for joining us this morning. And don't forget to jump over to cultivateconference.com.au and check out the program happening in November. This is Don Francisco with The Sower.